Well, anyway, I completed my tool making course apprenticeship in the spring of 45, and then my overriding object was to get back into the design department, which I did.
How did you do that?
Well, of course, I was working from within the company now, and I really don't recall. I guess I requested an interview with somebody out there, and
well, Mr. Gregory still had the head of the department.
He was at that time, yeah. Well, I don't know whether he remembered me. I doubt if he did, frankly.
Oh, okay.
You know, to be real honest about it, I don't think he did.
He had come and gone by this time. He'd gone and come back.
And come back again, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And what happened in between there is not really clear to me.
He went back to naval architecture, I think, for a time.
In that period?
Yeah.
Quite
and actually, one of the problems was a run-in with Joe Galena.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well,
so what year was this that you transferred?
This was, I think, April 45.
Okay.
And I had an interview with Tom Hibbert. And
now, he was a well-known designer of the classic
era.
Car era,
yeah.
And had come over from General Motors, had he?
I believe so.
Yeah, right. Sort of the twilight of his career.
He was in and out of General Motors several times, I think.
Oh, was he?
And Hibbert's history between in the late 30s, after LeBaron, after he left LeBaron and went to GM, is fuzzy to me.
Yeah.
But he was certainly a real gentleman, and he gave me the interview, and I think he liked what I had to show him. It was like starting all over again, really.
Mm-hmm.
But he put me in Martin Rigitko's department.
Which was
body surface development.
Or colloquially known as the layout department.
Layout, yeah. And among Martin's duties were to, besides committing the shape of the clay models to paper and translating them into engineering drawings, surface development drawings, he also made the initial package drawings, and these were usually made in a tenth scale.
And then they are the dimensions of the?
The dimensions of the package that the styling was to be done on.
And the package is known generically as?
I really don't know what else to call it other than the package.
Well, it's the dimensions of the chassis and the interior of the body.
Right, it's what the design department is given to work around.
Right, so ours comes from the engineering department, or at least
it probably comes from engineering department. Later on, it did. Period.
Yeah. Okay.
For instance, Youngren gave styling a package when the 49 Ford.
Exactly.
This is it. This is what you worked with.
Right. Okay.
But I think in Gregory's times, the design department had more input in it.
Ah, that's
right. I think that was my impression. And I made these tenth scale drawings for Rigitko, and I was quite happy about it because I was finally getting a chance to show my stuff. I was good at lines. I knew what a fair line, a good line was, and I made very clean and neat drawings, and Martin appreciated these, and although I was never told so, I think perhaps even Gregory must have appreciated them, because I know he did the same thing back in the days of the K model Lincoln, because I have one of his drawings.
So you're really?
Yeah. And I have to say it was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
It was not as well done as another one I have that Roland Taylor had done. But it was certainly good enough. It was very good.
Rollin? R-O-L-L?
I think R-O-L-L-I-N.
I-N.
It could have been Rollin. I'm not sure.
E-N-D, right. And he had been what?
Well, he was from General Motors, and I can't tell you his history, but I do have, on the big K model, I think they made them 12th scale because the cars were so huge. But I made it my business to get these drawings. I was very much interested in line drawings because there you're looking at the real car. You're not looking at a stylist or an illustrator's distortion of what that car was. And so I ran across these drawings of Gregory's and Taylor's, among other draftsmen. Mm-hmm. So I still have these drawings. And of course, they would take these 10-size drawings, and that's what they would do their sketching on because they were convenient.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Edsel probably sketched, or Gregory sketched on for him to do the Continental, for instance.
Actually, it was a salesman's dimensional drawing from a sales pamphlet.
Oh yeah.
Pamphlet,
well, those are derived. They're
largely the same,
made much smaller and. But anyway, that's what I did for Rigetko primarily. We would also make line drawings of competitive cars with the seating and so forth.
Right.
So as to have a guide for the competitiveness of our own products. And well, it was fun. But after several years of it, I couldn't really see much future in Rigetko's department. Because in the meantime, the General Motors crowd came over.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the design studio.
Yeah. And I could see Martin Rigetko's influence waning somewhat. And but let me say here, I always liked him and respected him. And he was a good boss, and I think I had his high regard also.
Uh-huh.
However, I'm afraid I lost much of it when I quit him because he regarded me as perhaps somewhat as an ingrate or unappreciative. You know, I left his department and went into pure styling.
How'd that come about?
Well, I was pushing for it. And
you felt the layout for your...
That it was sort of a dead end.
Dead end, yeah.
Unless I wanted to be a layout draftsman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really want to be a layout draftsman because the layout draftsman didn't have much input into the basic
orders.
Appearance of the car. They were executors, maybe, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, very little of that. They were very skilled men and certainly to be respected, but it really wasn't what I wanted to do.
Right.
So I guess I found myself working for Bill Schmidt.
Who was?
Head of what became the Lincoln Studio.
What period was this?
I would guess it was about 47,
mm-hmm.
maybe 47 or 48.
And Gregory had left by this point, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Gregory made this, I would only be rehashing what has been, you've heard many times already, I'm sure.
No, go ahead, give me your perception.
My view of it.
You were there.
Well, I remember making the 10th scale drawing of the house proposal, I will call Gregory's,
mm-hmm.
and Rigetko's
right.
version of this interpretation of this package drawing that Ljunggren sent over.
Which was to be the post-war Ford.
49 Ford.
Mm-hmm.
When Reach decided nothing we had was suitable. And that was not, perhaps, we couldn't fault him for that. Because the job that came out, eventually did come out as a 49 Mercury, was too big for a Ford at that time.
Is it your definite impression that the Gregory proposal for the 49 Ford, while rejected, was then somehow transmogrified into the 49 Mercury, or the 48 Mercury?
Well, the Gregory department had four basic new cars designed.
Post-war period.
For the post-war period.
Yeah.
All new cars with essentially flush sides.
Yeah.
Although they had a vestigial front fender shape in them, in the case of the Mercury and Ford.
Yeah.
Not on the Lincoln Cosmo.
Yeah.
That was strictly flush all the way through.
Right.
But these cars were, the smallest one was a little, I think, 106-inch wheelbase. Or was it 100-inch wheelbase?
The smallest of the four proposals.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that became the French Vedette.
Well, let's get into that. I want to ask you a few
things. All right.
Indicate how that happened.
Well, I think I remember it quite clearly.
Good.
But there were prototypes, steel prototypes of this model running around the Ford grounds.
The one with the 100 wheelbase?
Yeah.
Okay. Which is known as the small Ford.
Yeah. One of them, as you've no doubt heard, had five-cylinder engine in it.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
Experimental.
Others had the Ford 60 engine in, and I don't know what the rest had, but there were
60 was the 60.
This no, 60 was a small flathead V8.
Oh, the small flathead V8. And then it was a 90.
Henry developed that for the, well, it first came out in the European Fords, and then he put it on the 37 Ford. It was available.
Right.
Never took hold in this country very well. Just as an aside, I have one of those in my garage right now, just the engine sitting there.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Great.
So we had this small Ford, which well, they were very serious about coming out with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out, and you mentioned Mr. Talberg before. Mr. Talberg was very much seen in styling department in these days.
The post-war.
Yeah, planning and so forth for the post-war line. He had a, just an interesting, amusing little aside. Talberg had a phobia of people who chewed gum.
Oh, really?
Just couldn't stand it. I think I sympathize with him to some extent.
Yes, I think you're right.
Anyway, basically they found that it cost, material costs were the most, the cheapest thing in a car. It was tooling costs and the handling of all the parts and so forth, and the small car was really nothing but a miniature edition of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it cost nearly as much to, would have cost nearly as much to produce a small car as a full-size car of the period. And well, they had second thoughts about it, and eventually it was put on the side burner. And of course, by this time, an awful lot of money had been spent developing it. So the French people came over, and I guess they expressed a desire for it, and they got it.
The car went into Ford.
Yeah, car went into production as the French Vedette, pretty much as it was designed here for the small American Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, they botched it up, trying to make a notchback out of the fastback, but originally it was as it had been designed at Ford Design Department.
So I left three models.
Well, the next one up the line was the standard size Ford, was to be the standard size Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And sharing this body of the standard size Ford was the Mercury, which had a different front end,
mm-hmm.
of course, different instrument panel,
right.
A little longer hood. The wheelbase was extended forward of the cowl. So if you have that picture, you had the small one.
Mm-hmm.
The next basic body was shared by the standard size Ford and the smaller Mercury.
The smaller Mercury?
Yeah. Then you went up to the next size body.
Mm-hmm.
At GM, you'd have called it the C body. And this was to be used on the Lincoln Cosmopolitan and the larger Mercury. And there was some, it never got beyond paper though. I think they were going to put a Continental on this Cosmopolitan platform, chassis.
That's three.
But there's only three bodies now. We've three bodies we've discussed now.
Right. Is there a fourth
the small, the intermediate, and the large. Well, the large one came in different wheelbase lengths.
Okay, but essentially...
But it was essentially the same body as
basically I... Basically the three.
I would, from my recollection, I have to say that.
This came out of the Gregory shop, and these were to be his proposals for the post-mortem line.
Right. And when Breach came over, he thought this full-size Ford was too big for a Ford. Mm-hmm. And they... So they used that body. Well, as I said, there was already a small Mercury on that body.
Right.
So that body became the Mercury.
Okay.
One Mercury.
This is this B body?
We could call it the B body.
Okay, great.
If the little one was the A body.
Right.
We call that the B body.
Yeah.
And then that body was also utilized for a small Lincoln. Remember now, it was abandoned for Ford.
Exactly, right.
So this left a gap in the Ford line. There was no Ford. And that's when the crash program came for the 49 Ford.
But basically what I'm trying to establish here is that the B-body, the Ford,
yeah.
the Gregory proposal for the post-war Ford was deemed too large by Ernest Breach, and it was shifted to the Mercury and the small Lincoln.
Yeah. It might be misleading to say it was shifted to the Mercury because there was already Mercury being developed with that body.
What happened to that?
Well, you could say it came out if you wanted to.
It was deleted. And the Ford...
It doesn't much matter. You see, this was the Mercury that utilized that body, which was originally...
I'm sorry. Of course, you're right.
The B body...
So actually, the Ford, the B body was simply deleted. And
for the Ford.
For the Ford.
Yeah.
But did it become the C body?
No, it was still the B body, and it was used on the Mercury and the small Lincoln.
Apparently.
I'm looking. Is there some picture up here of the...
In audio version, in audio terms, you the design was not scrapped. It was utilized.
Except for the front end.
What's
in the case of the Mercury.
To me is that, how was B body utilized? If at all.
Well, again, A body went to the French Vidette. The B body, which was essentially the same theme,
mm-hmm.
A recognizable family resemblance.
A larger wheel.
Yeah, a much larger car.
Yeah.
The B body, originally slated for the full size Ford.
Right.
But the Mercury was also to share that body.
See,
the B body.
This is probably B1, B2.
If you put it in those terms.
Okay, yeah.
Just as since 41, Mercury had always shared the Ford body.
So the upper Mercury, the larger Mercury, was C1 and also the color.
Well, by this time there was only one Mercury. They had abandoned the larger Mercury.
Okay, fine, good. All right.
Mercury was to be just one line, and it utilized the B body.
Okay, fine, good. So, in effect, the B body, which was Gregory's post-war Ford proposal, became the Mercury in 49.
But don't forget, he intended to use that body on a Mercury from the beginning.
Okay, great.
Which might explain a little bit why it was fairly large.
Yeah, good.
Had
he also a C-body proposal?
Yeah, well, this was the body that went on the Cosmopolitan.
And was adapted as the Continental, Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, just the Cosmopolitan. But at an earlier stage, that body was also to be available in a Mercury. They were going to broaden the Mercury line. Mercury was to be more like Buick. Buick had, at one time, shared bodies with Chevrolet, and they shared bodies with Cadillac.
True.
When those bodies were completely different.
But they dropped the larger Mercury.
They dropped that, yeah.
Okay. And it became simply the Cosmopolitan, the C-body.
The C-body became unique to the Cosmopolitan.
Okay, good. Now what happened?
Well, since the B-body...
From your perspective.
Since the B-body went to the Mercury,
uh-huh.
And this left nothing for Ford.
Right.
The little Ford went to France.
Right.
There was no Ford.
Yeah.
So there was a crash program to design a 49 Ford.
Now, how'd that come about? Do you remember any of the...
Well, I'm sure you've heard the story. You'll see it.
No, I'm thinking of from the Ford perspective, not the design of the 49 Ford. Breech obviously made the decision, but now he's stuck. He's got a big hole for the 49 Ford.
Yeah.
What is his plan of attack from the Ford angle?
Well, of course, I wasn't privy to the inner councils of the company, so right. I'll have to give you my version of it. What I saw
or
heard.
Yeah, right. That's what we want.
I think there's always a tendency when a new crowd comes in to think that the house group is in need of a house cleaning, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And
especially if you're the GM oriented.
Yes.
As Breech was.
Yeah. But I also have to say, and here I hope you there's nothing personal here, but something happened at Ford Design, and that was touched upon the other night at the Raymond Loewy party. If somebody else hadn't asked it, I would have been tempted to ask it myself, except I didn't want to make any waves. But as I have tried to impart to you before, I was just crazy about the Ford products
mm-hmm.
through 41.
Mm-hmm.
These Zephyrs, they had such organically smooth, flowing, aerodynamic lines. Maybe it wasn't true aerodynamics, but it wasn't really phony either. Edsel did have an interest in aerodynamics, and I just wish Edsel would have lived a full life and
mm-hmm.
remained active.
Right.
I think I would have stayed with Ford Motor Company. But
Ford styling,
in my opinion, just went to hell in 42. I think they went from the best to the worst in one model year.
Now, you were there, weren't you, or had you just left?
Well, I went back to the tool room in 40.
Okay.
But the 42 models had been styled before.
Before you left?
Yes, that's
was
true.
Was there any, from your vantage point, could you see any reason why it turned
well, I had to speculate on that because they were already done, the 42 models, which of course were basically the 46, 7, and 8 models
right.
also. And they were now busy, when I came in that brief period, they were busy on what they hoped would be 43 and 44 models.
Right.
And they were now heavily influenced by the 41 and 42 GM cars.
Do you think that's where the influence came?
Yeah. But I think, putting it bluntly, I think they really fumbled the ball on that 42 Lincoln. The car.
It had to be Gregory.
Yeah. Well, Edsel was alive too. What happened, if I can give my interpretation
Please.
Of it, was that up until the 41 model, really the 40 model, because the 41 was merely a carryover
yeah.
of the 40. Ford styling had been going their own way. They weren't worried about what anyone else was doing. They were confident of what they were doing. They were trying to build beautiful cars, and they were succeeding dramatically. The cars were honest, as I said. They were trying to make beautiful cars. They weren't building what later came to be known as commercial packages. And Edsel was an aesthete. The results were terrific. But
were they commercially?
Well, they sold well. Yeah,
okay.
Zephyr sold 20,000 cars, and Zephyr was outselling LaSalle
mm-hmm.
Throughout its life. I mean, through 41.
Had something happened at GM that you alluded to earlier?
Well, the 41 GM line was a very saleable. They were pretty hot cars. They were well styled. They were over decorated.
The whole line, or just
well, I didn't think the Chevrolet was all that great. If you want to stick to front ends, I think the 41 Ford was nicer than the 41 Chevy. But But the 41 Ford had kind of a balloony look to it, really. It he was trying to put the headroom and big windows that he had put in the Zephyr, and they didn't go on that 114-inch wheelbase like they did on 125. And also, I think Charlie Sorensen was in there trying to make the cars easier to fabricate. This became evident on the 41 Ford and Mercury, and it became evident on the 42 Lincoln.
And that, what do you mean?
Well, take the hood, for instance. I spoke of these flowing organic lines that the 40 Zephyr had.
Mm-hmm.
The 40 Mercury had it too, and even 39 Ford.
Mm-hmm.
The front fender came down, and between the fender and the hood shape, there was a big fillet. You know what a fillet is?
Yeah.
Well, it's a big rounded area where one shape is married to the other shape by means of a big rounded fillet.
Mm-hmm.
It's filled in.
Mm-hmm.
And where an airplane wing meets the fuselage, instead of a sharp juncture of the two shapes, there's a rounded surface to join them.
Mm.
This is organic styling. It's like a thing alive, where one shape doesn't just butt into another, but there's an easy transition.
It's F-I-L-L-E-T.
Right. And the shape between the fundamental shape between fenders and hood,
mm-hmm,
had this fillet, and it made the hood probably a little harder to fit because it had to fit between the two fenders and make an even joint.
Uh-huh.
Well, on the 41 Ford and Mercury, and then the 42 Lincoln, the hood just sat on top of the fenders, and if only the fenders were to be accounted for, the hood could be a half an inch one side or the other, nobody'd know the difference. Because it just sat on it, you know, just plunk, there it was. It didn't have to align.
In the Ford's Design Center glossary,
oh yeah,
a fillet is, as you described it, curved surface used to blend two intersecting planes.
They didn't have that tailored look. They had a fabricated look. And it's a tailored look that makes the car look expensive. And they think people don't know that or notice it. Well, people don't really consciously know it, but they consciously know when a car looks rich and tailored and when it looks cheap and fabricated. And then, of course, the 42s were over-decorated. They had themes on the front end for several cars, not one car, but we used to describe the 46 Lincoln as a mouth organ on a manhole cover. And,
I've not heard that before.
It didn't have flow. It was vulgar.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad.
Yes.
And Ford design was going to hell. And I don't know whether... I don't... Because of his past... inspired service. I don't like to blame Gregory for it, but somebody should be blamed.
There was a lot of internal unrest. The new regime was coming in, and the old order was beginning to totter. And I think there was with Breech coming in with his meat act. There was a lot of.
Well, I just wanted to say this 41 GM line, and in particular the Cadillac, was a very hot car, very well styled, somewhat over-decorated, but very saleable. Add to this the fact that it had hydromatic transmission, which was a tremendous selling car, and I'm sure Edsel was just worried stiff. And he gave the directive to styling, and it had to be a crash program, to come out with something competitive with this Cadillac, and when you do something in panic, you never do it well, just like I didn't turn that machine off. I was panicked, and I screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kindest interpretation I can give of it.
Well, it would lend credence to the atmosphere at the time.
Yeah, and that's basically what Tucker Maddowick told his questioner Wednesday night, that it was a Ford's response to Cadillac, the GM.
Right. Yeah, right.
It was a hurried, panicky response, and Ford had lost their swift or their deft, sure hand, and it showed.
Right.
So back to the 49 Ford. We had the package drawing, and Ragitko was instructed to draw something, and.
But you mentioned McPherson had dictated.
Youngren,
I'm sorry, yeah.
Harold Youngren was brought over by Breech as the chief engineer. And he made his first package sketch on a napkin, which this has been well publicized.
I haven't heard this drawing. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he was showing it to Henry II or who.
You were describing Mr. Youngren's definition of the post-war Ford package.
Yeah. And this was made into a cleaned up line drawing with more dimensions, mm-hmm. at the airframe building by the engineering department. And at least I assume it came from airframe building.
Mm-hmm.
And then one copy of this final package drawing was given to Ragitko and the other one to George Walker's group.
Now, this is the first time you mentioned George Walker's group, but where did they come from?
Well, Walker's previous...
From your perspective. Where did you first hear of them? How did they come
I can't tell you specifically. I just knew that we were faced with some competition. I guess Walker had solicited. He'd probably been hounding Henry Ford for an interview to get the Ford account for a long time.
Do you think there might have been a breach?
A breach originated thing? I really wouldn't. I'd have no insight on that.
But from your perspective in the design staff, you realized that there was external competition.
At some point there, it became apparent. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And I have no doubt that DeWalker was probably working on both Breech and Henry. I mean, these fellows are hungry, and
had you known who Walker was at this point?
Oh yes. As an auto enthusiast, I was aware that Walker had. They had the Nash account back. The first car it was apparent on was a 39 Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Walker, like Lowy, was the front man. He didn't really do much designing himself.
As you subsequently found out.
And,
did this competition manifest itself internally in any way that you could recall? Like personnel or location or?
Well,
not from what you've read subsequently.
My first inclination of anything happening was that they cleared out a space. We were still on the south end of the building in the original design department location at that time.
That had not moved yet. Yeah.
We were still on the south end, where we had been from when I was there in the 41 stint.
Right.
And they cleared out a large room on the south end of the building for Walker. And he was given, I believe, some of our modelers. And he may have gotten some modelers from the outside, too. And then he put in his, we call them the Gold Dust Twins, Elwood Engel and the fellow that stayed with Ford, I can't remember his name.
Joe Orris,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they were the hot shots down there.
Did you see them? Did you have much
interaction with them? Later on, yes.
But not at this period?
Not initially. I managed to get into the studio down there a couple times, see what they were doing. I wasn't supposed to, but I did.
Uh-huh. Did they come to your studio?
I wasn't aware of it. They may have, but I really can't answer that truthfully.
So basically, you sense there was a competition shaping up.
Oh yes, yes, there was a competition shaping up.
It was an open secret.
And while my superiors probably wouldn't admit it, we were running scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they had reason to run scared because, you know.
Which was why?
Well, it was a competition, and if the house loses a competition and some outsider wins it, then they start wondering, why are we keeping the house crew?
This was probably...
Now, of course, the lower down you got, the safer you were, but Mr. Gregory, I'm sure, had every reason to be concerned if he wanted to stay there, and so did some of the others.
This was probably the earliest, I suppose, Harley Earl back in the 30s, I believe I've read that he had competition with designers, and sometimes it resulted in their elimination if they
didn't. Sure.
But I think this is probably the first time that a major corporation brought in an outside consultant to possibly outdo the internal.
It's the
incumbent group.
It's the earliest one I know of that was done in that way. Of course, he always had outside groups such as Briggs making contributions.
But they were sort of in-house.
Well, almost, yeah. I don't know how to define the difference.
Anyway, you're running scared. I think it's a good
Briggs
choice.
Was only trying to sell their services, their bodies.
Yeah, right.
It was a goodwill operation, really. And Walker, in turn, was getting the Ford account meant really at the expense of the Ford... existing Ford group, although not necessarily either. I mean,
maybe that time he viewed it as
Who knows? Maybe Mr. Gregory was proud and he quit. Maybe he could have stayed.
Well, don't let's tell how that happened.
Well, my only recollection was, as I say, they had the we were aware that we were in competition with somebody, and
you saw these foreigners down at the other end of the building.
Yeah. So we were working also. They were working feverishly, and so were we, to come up with our answer to the package. Some people will tell you that the answers look very similar, but I don't buy that. I think at the risk of being considered a heretic, I have to say I thought their job was a better job.
This was the angle of ours.
Even though I was working on the one we were doing. Because it had a better balanced, it was better balanced. It was just a matter of subtlety of tumble home and the slope of the windshield and the taper of the C-pillar and a more level belt line. Ours had too much of a dropping belt line. Looked like the last larks looked.
Those two bigger larks?
Yeah. The buffalo look, I called it. Real beefy up front, and then it tapered down to a puny tail. Anyway, they had this bright yellow model in there. I don't even remember what color our model was, frankly, but I also remember ours had some fussy trim in the C-pillar, which did nothing for the car. Well, in short, the management picked Walker's job. And when I say Walker's job, I could put quotations around that, because...
Walker Associates.
Walker was credited with it, but by now we all know how that car was designed.
We won't get into your recollections of that in a moment, but competition was obviously, the die was cast, the Gregory model had lost out.
Yeah.
How does that
so
percolate?
So I suppose
staff?
Mr. Gregory felt honor bound to resign.
How did that percolate when the staff? How did you find out about it?
Well, the word gets around quick when which job is picked. Mm-hmm. So for one thing, all work on ours stops.
Oh, well, that's a good indicator.
Yeah.
Did Mr. Gregory say anything to you at all?
No.
The assembled group?
No, not the assembled group. He maybe did to the higher ups, but.
So obviously knew if work was stopped, that particular model didn't make it.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, then, it's a little hazy in my recollection.
What happened then to you? What I really mean.
Well, I was. It's about that time that I. Somewhere in there, I was still working for Rigetko at that time, and I can't recall just exactly when the GM group came over, but Walker didn't just go on to ever greater strengths there. Walker was almost forgotten about again quite soon,
mm-hmm.
and a group came over from GM,
mm-hmm.
led by John Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
And a man named George Snyder was Oswald's man in styling.
But, before that happened, though...
before that happened, I went to work with Bill Schmidt in his Lincoln studio.
Before the Schmidt... before that happened, Mr. Gregory resigned, right?
Gregory resigned, I believe, immediately.
Shortly after the...
Very shortly after that,
known,
yeah.
Officially.
I think just a day after.
And I believe that Mr. Hibbert was temporarily in charge, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, yeah. Good. Tom Hibbert, yeah. That would be about 1946, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So Mr.
Yeah.
Oswald brought a contingent.
Well, I suppose Oswald is getting a little ahead of the story. I was from
yes,
my...
Yes, what happened to you when you...
I went to Bill with Bill Schmidt, and...
I wonder who had brought Bill Schmidt in. Was it Hibbert, you think? Or
well, I don't know how he got in there. He went. He started as an illustrator at Willow Run
during
the war.
Okay.
And I guess it was felt that if you were an illustrator, you naturally fit in styling. And so I found him in styling when I came back.
In what capacity?
Well, a stylist or a designer,
oh,
illustrator
or
what.
Or
I don't think so.
Yeah.
He might have been some kind of group leader. I don't know.
Okay.
But
so you were assigned to Schmidt's staff.
Well, after working for Rigetko for several years.
Doesn't mean yeah,
yeah.
You made the break. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Rigetko, you said, was a little unhappy with your defection. Presumably.
Noticeably, yes. Because
yeah.
I'd left him, and he'd kind of taken me under his wing, you know, and. Well, I guess that sums it up, really.
Sure.
The rest would be speculation.
Yeah.
But he remains very high in my
mm-hmm.
esteem. I respected him very highly, and I know he made a substantial contribution to these pre-war Zephyrs and Mercuries that I admired so much.
He made a substantial contribution to your perception. Surface development.
That's true. He knew what a good line was. I mean, that's what it really boiled down to.
Sure. Really important.
And that reference is going to come up again here in a moment regarding another man who was quite different from Rigetko. But anyway, I didn't... I don't want to badmouth Bill Schmidt too much, because I think basically he wanted to be well liked, and I think he was for the most part. I didn't feel though that Bill was a real... I didn't feel Bill had gasoline in his blood, so to say.
Yeah.
He was not an automobile man by my definition.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know much history about automobiles, the background, the great cars of the past and the designers and so forth. And maybe sometimes I made somewhat less than tactful remarks, and well, it
in his hearing, you mean?
Well, yeah, to him even.
Oh, my.
I wasn't the most tactful person, I suppose. You know, I was young, very young, and I didn't have the edges knocked off. And you know, so soon we grow old und so late smart.
we all went through that period.
So if I would have played my politics, I would have done a lot better at Ford. Bill was a very good illustrator.
Was he?
he would make very slick renderings, and
slick technically or aesthetically?
Well, it was hard to separate the two.
Sure.
I didn't think they always had, or they necessarily had, great design merit, but most people can't separate a slick rendering from a slick design. They don't know whether they're looking at a good design or a beautiful rendering. Well, William B. Stout made the observation many, many years ago that many a Detroit management has been sold an ugly design with a beautiful rendering. And that tendency was accelerating at Ford.
It seemed to be summed up Mr. Schmidt's aesthetic approach in those days.
I felt so, anyway, at any event. At any rate, we didn't get along as good as either of us might have desired. Well, first thing you know, I was back working for Rigetko for a while. Well, then the GM crowd came in, and Rigetko didn't want to take me right away.
Because
I was a prodigal son.
Right.
I mean, I had to come back with, he didn't greet me with the fatted calf or anything, and I had to come back hat in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood it, and I didn't blame him, you know. But anyway.
Well, basically you're saying Bill reassigned you to Rigetko staff?
I don't know if he reassigned me or what, how it happened. I don't remember, but no, he wasn't able to assign me. But
he may
have said that I wasn't working out for him.
Oh, okay.
I don't know who he said it to, but
yeah.
Possibly. In any event, I do remember being a little uneasy for a few days. Didn't occur to me that I couldn't go right back to Rigetko or somewhere else.
Yeah.
But there I was. Then the GM crowd came.
Quite a change, I suspect.
Yeah. And what happened to Walker during that period, interim period, I really can't say, but as I say, there was kind of a gap there. And then there was a period where the GM crowd was riding high in the saddle.
This Oswald and Snyder, John Oswald and John
Snyder. Well, there were John Oswald and George Snyder and Styling and Henry Grevy and Body Engineering.
Who sort of survived the...
I guess he did.
Yeah, for a while.
And so forth.
Yeah.
But these men, even though it was a GM crowd, I had quite a bit of respect for Snyder and Oswald, because Oswald was a body engineer from the old school.
Sure.
He was sort of the Joe Galam of Oldsmobile division.
Really? Uh-huh.
And George Snyder might have been more parallel to Gregory.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very...
He done the Y job for Harley Earl, as we find out.
Snyder did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised. He did the, my understanding was that Snyder and his group did the body development for the new post-war GM cars, as represented by the 48 C-body Oldsmobile and Cadillac, and then the next year the whole rest of the GM line.
Something they were available. What happened? At GM.
Well, I don't know. Breach probably got Oswald, and Oswald got Snyder.
The rest of them, yeah.
You know how it is. You bring your group with you.
Sure. Gene Bardnay was among that group, wasn't he?
Yes, Gene Bardnay and my nemesis, Don De La Rosa.
Mm-hmm. Strange group,
and
wasn't it? A motley crew, you might say.
Well, they weren't. They weren't a motley crew, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't describe it that way. They were a group of these slick rendering men,
yeah,
as the group I would put Bordenay and De La Rosa and...
Whiz with the airbrushes. Right?
Yeah, right. They were airbrush whizzes. But it was Snyder that I had the rapport with. He was the line man. He really
sure
designed the body.
Right, yeah.
These other guys fooled around with front ends and trim and chrome. And
that was your basic orientation?
Toward the body design, yeah. And, well, as time, as the months went on, I think Snyder was made aware of my talents and...
would have been sympathetic.
Yeah. Somehow, though, I got placed in an instrument panel studio.
Who ran that?
Well, I really can't remember. I remember we did panels for the Lincoln and Mercury, which Snyder oversaw. And we, I remember laying out a panel for the 51 Ford, one which Bill Schmidt had made a rendering for. He designed the theme of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was my job to take these very much out of proportion renderings,
mm-hmm.
and reproportion them to the actual dimensions available in the car,
uh-huh.
and with the necessary space available for radio and controls and heater and instruments,
mm-hmm.
defrosters and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have air conditioning to put up with yet. it was a very demanding job, and to do it and yet keep the theme, maybe even refine it a bit, was probably the toughest job in styling. The area around the corner of the cowl there in the A-post is the most complex area of the whole car,
mm-hmm.
from a body design standpoint. And if I say so, I did a good job. So I did all of the instrument panels from the 50 Lincolns and Mercurys through the 54 Lincoln and 55 Mercury.
Oh.
55 Mercury was my undoing. in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've done a very good job on these instrument panels, and
these are for the early 50s.
Yeah.
But executed probably in 48, 49.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was doing instrument panels yet in early 53 when I left.
Oh, okay.
Which is one reason I left. You know, you do a good job in some area, you stay in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if no one else seems to be able to do a good job in that area. And Mercury had some rather outstanding, unusual instrument panels in that period, the 52 panel. Now, I don't mean to say I set the theme for those panels,
yeah.
but I worked them out.
You executed them.
Yeah, I executed them.
It's no mean feat.
Well, it wasn't. Anyway, so I came to the attention of Snyder's attention, the notice there, and he, being a good line man, appreciates a good line man, and he put me in a body development studio. And unfortunately, this is where I really wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, it only lasted several months.
Okay.
Well, one Friday afternoon, we were busy developing the lines for what was to be the new 52 body on the blackboard, full size.
Which was to be all new, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Snyder would sit back there in his wooden armchair, and I think he was mimicking Harley Earl, because I read where Harley Earl did the same thing, which is okay. And he, well, what else could he do? He had to sit back in an armchair and look at it. And he could see the slightest variation if a line was out of, you know what a fair line is versus a bad line.
Okay.
Fair line is one that makes a smooth transition. It may accelerate, it may decelerate, but it doesn't have any bumps in it, huckles. Well, it's one word they use,
okay.
meaning bumps, irregularities.
Right. Sure.
Even when you get and sight it, you know, graciously foreshorten it, because
uh-huh.
then any irregularity shows up quickly. Comes from naval architecture. It's the way they fare out the lines of ship hulls or yacht hulls also.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd sit back and evaluate these lines and tell me to lower that line a 16th of an inch, or make an overlay of the whole top and lower the whole thing bodily, or rock it, or whatever, you know. And it was very, you know, very demanding, specialized work.
Not bad.
And I know that I gained his respect, and I respected him because he knew what he was doing.
Sure.
And one Friday there, we were getting ready to show, for a show, Henry II was supposed to come in. And Snyder's right-hand man was Leonard Trewin. T-R-E-W-I-N, I think.
Administrative assistant.
Well, he was the working assistant. Leonard was his blackboard man, too.
Oh, I see.
I was really Leonard's assistant, you might say.
Okay.
But I got along great with both of them. They were... There was mutual respect between us. And Leonard was a ruddy-faced little fellow who just loved chocolate. And it's a good thing to remember in view of what happened. I should have remembered it in view of what happened to me. But anyway, so they were, Leonard was Ford came in, and Leonard was looking, Snyder told him to fetch some particular drawing to show Ford. And Leonard just went frantically looking for it. He was very high-strung. I don't even know if he found it or not. I do know that the next Monday I came into work and asked where Leonard was. And Leonard had a stroke. Leonard was dead. Yeah. And the studio, it broke up right after that.
Really?
Yeah.
He was the glue that held it together.
Well, I don't know what happened, but Snyder's star was falling too. And here I was very much very disappointed because I thought finally I was getting in with men who were at the top and whom I had a mutual respect with, and here he gets sidetracked. Eventually they sent Snyder to England. But Snyder was, as some of your other interviewees I'm sure may have revealed, he was not very well liked in Steining. He was sort of arrogant and high-handed. Again, I think he was aping Harley Earl. And there was no need for him to be, really. He was very capable, and he could have... It's hard for me to relate this, because I never... If he was, I accepted it. I didn't... The important thing to me was the product.
Mm-hmm.
He was capable and competent, and he knew his business, and I respected him for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if a guy is the nicest fellow in the world, if he is incompetent and he turns out a lousy product, I had no use for him, really. I was stuck back on instrument panels, and I found myself, I think by this time, working on Lincoln panels, whether it was probably 52 Lincoln, and later on the 52 Mercury panel. Anyway, I worked with Dave Ash and Damon Woods on the Lincoln panel.
Interesting duo.
Yeah, they were very good friends. I don't know if you were making tapes when Damon was still alive, but Dave, I'm sure, is capable of expressing himself pretty well. So I did a succession of Mercury panels, the 52, 53, 54, but the 55 was different. On the 55 panel, I'm going to tell you the story of that, and I'll be through with my days at Ford. And in 55, the exterior body was well along, and pretty late in the program, they realized they didn't have an instrument panel for the 55 Mercury. So they put every stylist, figuratively speaking, even the janitors, making sketches of the, this is to overdraw a point,
right, yeah,
making sketches of thumbnail sketches with heavy felt pens,
mm-hmm,
trying to establish a theme. And we just papered the walls with them,
mm-hmm,
of the Lincoln studio. Lincoln Mercury studio, I believe, was under the same roof at the time.
Standard technique at the time when you were searching for a theme?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Except they didn't go to color even. They were just the single color felt tip pen on a white paper.
Yeah.
But just plaster the walls with them. And believe me, there was a lot of mediocre crap on the walls. That's all it was wallpaper. So everybody looked at them, and everybody